Welcome to the High and Low Podcast. This is your host, Bravo, Bravo, Ducking Bravo. I had originally planned on having this episode do The Valley Episode 3 and Potomac Reunion Part 1. Things changed. Things changed because The Valley popped off in a way that I did not expect. The Valley is giving, and I will say it might be worth watching. I find myself engaged, I'm laughing, I'm yelling. It has a little bit of something for everyone. And the key recipe for me is authenticity, as we know. You love to see somebody who's likable in an authentic way and somebody who is loathable in an authentic way. And I think we have that in spades on either direction. The people who are awful are not awful in a way that's like malicious or vindictive or plotting. They just can't help themselves by being the awfulness that they are. And there's something pure about that. I started to watch this when it aired on Tuesday night, and it took it out of me. After 20 minutes, I felt like I'd been watching for 3 hours. That's how much content it's giving. My hand hurt the whole nine. It really was kind of amazing. So I had to get through it in three separate sections. I've got like 12 pages of notes in front of me. Let's get into it. This episode starts, you know what? It is a reflection of the chaos of the cast, the chaos of the direction of the show. It starts with a song that's like, "Until the daylight, we can do it all night." And that's the song overlay over B-roll of a farmer's market. A song saying, "Dance until the daylight, we can do it all night," over carrots and turn up some radishes, green beans fresh from the garden. And then we see Jax and Brittany and Brittany's mother and cruises in a stroller. They're rolling up on the farmer's market and they're debriefing each other on the previous night's excitements from boys' night and then from her girls' night. Brittany's mother comes in and takes Cruz on a walk on the stroller so that they can be candid. So Brittany gives the full rundown about the back and forth with her and Kristen. "Well, you're just being malicious." And Jax is telling her about how he invited Alex and Luke. And oh, Luke, and just complaining about him. "Why would I want to be friends with the ex of my girlfriend?" That whole thing. And then everything coming out about, "Oh, yeah, well, Zach said, the Jasmine said, the Janet said." And this is where I got panicked. I got panicked here because I was like, please don't show me the crux, the main issue of Kristen bringing up the racist Republican stuff through snippets and weird cut up flashbacks as Brittany narrates. I'm begging you, Bravo, to not show it to me that way. Just show me the tape. I don't want it cut up. I don't want a weird filter on it. I don't want Brittany chirping in every 5 seconds as it plays out. Just give me the footage. But to be a Bravo fan is to know pain. And that is how they presented it to us. They have Brittany telling the whole story. Kristen starts bringing up that Janet told Jasmine that Michelle was a racist and a Republican and all this crap. And they finally show us the footage. But again, it's with like a weird OG Instagram filter on it. And they're doing a weird camera edit. They had way too much fun with it. So bottom line is that at girls' night, things went left. Kristen found out that her ex, Alex, had been invited, and she lost it and went into another dimension. And when she was so mad about that, she just starts throwing stuff. And the thing that she throws is, "Oh, yeah, well, Zach told me that Janet told Jasmine that Michelle is a racist and a Republican." So this is like third-hand information, because in my recap before, I was like, I can't believe Kristen is saying this and accusing this person of doing it. And I knew at the time that she was speaking for someone. I didn't realize she had never heard it herself, period. She's literally reiterating something that Zach told her in confidence. And I knew it was true because in the last episode, Zach runs off to the kitchen. And he's yelling from the kitchen, but he's by himself. And he had a stressed out look on his face. And I was like, that's the look of a person who trusted the wrong gal with some information. So I knew there was something. And that's why I started digging before the last episode. I was like, what is this? What is this coming from? But it is a little bit like the telephone game. It didn't exactly happen like that. And thankfully, Janet clears it up in a minute. But for the moment, as the episode starts, there's a lot of yelling as they're flashing back. As soon as Kristen says what she says, either as a deflection from the Alex Luke storyline, or because she's just so mad she couldn't help herself but say the worst thing that she had in her arsenal, Jasmine stands up and is like, you know what? She's mad, real mad. And she gets over in Kristen's face and she says, look at me. She says, look at me. You're not gonna effing say that Janet told me she was racist. But Kristen does not back down. She's like, that's what Zach told me. That's what Zach told me. And then he's yelling from the kitchen. That's when he's yelling, I never said that. I never said that, Michelle. Kristen. And Jax is just listening to this as he's sipping on the $8 raspberry lemonade. And he finally says, that's not gonna fly. And Brittany ends it with, I wonder how Michelle's feeling today after being told that in her own home. And then whoosh, we get the big font of the valley. Bravo. And suddenly we are in the aspirational behind the Chateau Marmont home of Jesse, Hesse, and Michelle. Jesse, the bougiest person that Brittany's ever met besides Lisa Vanderpump, once again is wearing what appears to be a Hanes V-neck shirt and has erect nipples. It's his favorite combination. He's chewing something in the kitchen and Michelle is telling him how horrible the previous night was because she has never in her whole life heard her name mentioned with words like racist. And she tells them the whole thing. Zach said, as Jasmine said, that Janet said that Michelle is a racist and a Republican. And I mean, try saying that five times fast. It really is the telephone game here. And Jesse's comment is like, I'm sorry, she said what? And he repeats it back and he's like, what the F is wrong with her? But he says the full F word and their daughter is right there next to them. Little three-year-old Isabella. And she yells out, stop that. And she's so cute because he cursed because he said the F word. And so Michelle jumps in. She's like, we have to stop saying that. You cannot say the F word. You say it too much. You say it every day. You can't just say F. And then she says the word too. And then little Isabella says, you say that every day. And then Michelle goes off about how she's upset that Janet would even say that about her. And how could she possibly be her friend if she said that? And doesn't anybody know her? And she's first generation Mexican and first generation Persian. And she's still so shocked about the whole thing. So Jesse's advice is you just need to call Janet. Call her directly right now and clear this up. And so she does. Right in that moment, she calls Janet. And she says to her, hey, I need to talk to you. I want you to be honest. I really need you to tell me the truth here. Did you ever say to Jasmine that I'm racist and Republican? And Janet is shooketh. She's like, what? That is complete BS accusation. Those words never left my mouth about you. I would never have said that. I need to have a conversation with Kristen immediately. That is ridiculous. And I'm looking at her face and I believe her. I do believe her that she did not say that because the look on her face is one of shock. I mean, it's either Oscar worthy or one of shock. And in a confessional, she says that Kristen and her have been friends for years. But about a year ago, she had to put a boundary up because Kristen's relationship with Alex, I suppose, was so tumultuous and crazy and all over the place that she had to put some distance or put some boundaries up about it. And Kristen did not like that. And she says, ever since she did that, it feels to her like Kristen is always looking for an opportunity to throw her under the bus. And that seems like a really mature reaction. Now, my dear friend Emily of the account, She's Speaking with Emily Hanks. She put a post up, and this is why I love the OG VPR fans, because she says, remember when Stassi and Katie had to cut Kristen off due to her up and down relationship with Carter? Kristen has not changed, LOL. So this is not new behavior for Kristen to have these tumultuous relationships that just suck the life out of her friends and they need to put a boundary up. Janet and Michelle also point out that, or Michelle realizes that she decided to come after someone who was not there. The only person who could not be there, which was Janet. She was home. She wasn't at girls' night. She's pregnant. She's very pregnant, and she's not going to be drinking. And Janet says this is a new low, even for Kristen, for her to wait until her, quote, sick pregnant friend isn't around to start a huge accusation like that. And then she says, F her. Again, poor Isabella. And Janet says her theory is that Kristen got so upset because she does not want Alex giving his side of things to Luke. In another confessional moment, they cut back to Janet on a couch, and she's saying, Kristen's relationship with Alex, the narrative around it changed when she started dating Luke. Suddenly, she started talking about Alex like he was a narcissist, when before that, she had owned up to also contributing to the downfall of the relationship, making her own mistakes. But suddenly, everything was Alex's fault, and it turned into a villain and victim story. And Janet saying, well, hey, we all know that wasn't true. We were there. And Janet feels like she and Michelle are collateral damage to Kristen just panicking in that moment and saying whatever. And Janet says that she is upset about this. And in a confessional by Michelle, she's talking about how close she and Kristen had gotten, that she was one of her best friends. They'd known each other for years. And that when she was having relationship issues, Kristen was, they would bond over that because Michelle had had issues with Jesse. Shocker. And that she's mad at herself for not saying anything when it all happened. She was just so in shock. So she hangs up with Janet and she says to Jesse, like, I'm not a Republican. And even if I was, who gives an F? And she says the F word. And poor Isabella. What is that? Five of them? Six F-bombs? And Jesse loves that, of course. He's like, oh, mommy said the F word. Then we cut to Kristen and Luke, and they are boxing up one apartment and moving to another floor or down the hall to another apartment. And at this point, I'm starting to get really annoyed with Kristen. There's something about the cadence of her speech. I am so ready to have a new space. Is it the way she talks all the time or just the way she talks with Luke? I'm going to have to really start noticing. There's dogs around. There's a bunch of boxes everywhere. And he says, and I can't wait to break in the new apartment too. And she's like, do you mean have sex in there in the bed?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And they do a very quick walkthrough of what looks like a very average two-bedroom, two-bathroom apartment in Valley Village. They got the music. Meow, meow. Builder's grade. Meow, meow. The kitchen, builder's grade. And then she says, for an extra $73 a month, I get like a bunch of extra space. Quote, there's room to play. Like we have an entire drawer of sex toys. We get it. Comprende. We're good. Thank you. The hot dog and the donut. Everyone's clear on it. Enough. Pulling a Vicky, holding my hand up saying, call me in 5 years, all right? And Kristen starts telling Luke how upset she was, that she is especially upset because she had told Jax when they were at the steakhouse where she did not eat steak that it was fine that he was still friends with Alex, but not to bring him around. And then he does the exact thing she said not to do. And at this point, I think people need to start playing reverse psychology games with Jax, sort of like Briar Rabbit, who's like, don't throw me in the thorn bushes, not anything but that. And so they throw him in the thorn bushes, but that's what he wanted. He wanted to be thrown in there because he knows his way around. He's not going to get hurt and he's good. She needs to start thinking like that with Jax. This is basic Aesop's Fable stuff, Kristen. But Kristen can't be reasoned with. There's not a lot of logic here because in her confessional, she's tripling down. She's still like, well, if Jax is going to start doing stuff like that, then I'm going to start calling people out on their BS. How does one thing have anything to do with the other? You just want to light the world on fire if you're in a bad mood? All right. Part of me respects it. Go ahead. And then this next part got really interesting because she turns to Luke and she says, and then I brought up what Zach told us. Us. U.S. Us. Two people. More than one. So Luke was there when Zach gave them a rundown of this situation. Zach. What were you thinking? Kristen in a confessional says, before the show started, there was a lot of shit talking within the group. And, quote, Janet was trying to start a bunch of shit with Michelle by insinuating that Michelle could be homophobic or racist. Time out. She said insinuating. She didn't say that Janet actually ever said those words. So she's going off about how Zach denied it, but I'm like, denied what? What words were actually said? But she's still going off, and she says that she knows deep down that Zach told her because he secretly wanted her to light a fire. And that reminds me of in the Goonies, when they want to break something, they hand it to Chunk because they know that Chunk is going to drop it and break it. Goonies, great movie if you haven't seen it. back to Kristen. She does start crying when she starts talking to Luke about how Michelle must have felt hearing that. So she does understand that for Michelle to be hearing that in her own home, that she probably caused some real pain. But she frames it as, I'm sorry for bringing Michelle into, quote, any of the BS that Janet started. That Janet started. It's so interesting to see people's perspectives. So to her, she's blameless in this, completely blameless. But to everybody, I think, in the Bravo sphere watching, the person who brings it up on camera dealt it. Doesn't matter where it came from. If you are going to loudly say while you're being filmed, whatever it is, XYZ, you are the bringer and bearer of that message. You have given that message life and now a plot line, and now it can't be put back in the bottle. And Luke's advice is the best thing to do right now is if someone tells you something,
just put it in your back pocket. Just keep it back there. Doesn't need to be weaponized.
And she says she didn't mean to weaponize it, but she acknowledges that is what she did. Then we move on to something lighter. That was a lot of heavy right in the beginning of the episode. So we see Nia and Danny with their sweet selves and their three children under two. And she is going to go to an event. And so he's wearing a baby. There's babies everywhere. Babies on the wall, babies on the counters. There's babies all over the place. Anywhere you look, there's a baby. And he's going to deal with this by himself while she goes off, and he's ready for it. He's assessing. He's like, how much milk do we have? Do we need this formula? Blah, blah, blah. He's ready. She's not going for very long. She says she does brand stuff. I'm sure she has a big following. I haven't even looked at her page on Instagram. And I'm sure she has, you know, sponsorships and things like that. And so she's going on a cruise to check out spas. And I'm doing something wrong in my life because that is what I would like to be doing. So I don't even think she's going for a full 24 hours. And Danny is good to go. Like I said, he's leaving her feeling like he's confident. He's got it. He does say, like, at one point he's a little sleep deprived and could she write something down? But she's like, you're fine. You got this. They smooch and she's gone. We love to see it. Then we cut to Jax. Jax is driving a golf cart across the street from a Bed Bath & Beyond where he is going to be opening, I think it's a bar called Jax's. What else would he call it? What else would the men of Vanderpump Rules call an establishment other than to just name it after themselves? It's called Jax's. Jax's. Studio City. And he walks in and there's a bunch of men in there. And those are his investors. And he says in a confessional, he did not have to put up a dime for this bar. That he has three men. Who have put up all the money for this. And he is just helping make decisions, saying, like, I like this, I like that. He comes in, he's all like man spreading. Like, he definitely seems very comfortable in the space. It's named after him. He is the face of it, but he doesn't have to take a financial risk. And he also acknowledges in a confessional that bars can be pretty terrible for your life and your relationship. And he points to Schwartz and Sandoval for that, and then jump scare. They show Schwartz and Sandoval, and I wasn't prepared for that. And then he says he doesn't want that. He wants things to stay good between him and Brittany. And today they are working on hiring staff. So he gets a say in everything. And so there's four men sitting at a little table, and a stream of women are coming in. Woman number one hands him her stuff. Woman number two hands him her stuff. Now a woman walks in, and she's cute. And she's blessed in the chest. Jax is like, she's not wearing a bra. And it really is filmed like an 80s summer camp movie. There's a lot of pauses and it just of men staring. There's a few cymbals in the background. And Jax smirking at the camera in a confessional saying like he feels like he should be the one to hire everybody. And the confessional, he's like, did we hire her? Then the next person who comes in is a bartender, and everybody who comes in has like dark hair and like, you know, a red lip. And the bartender, they love her look. They love her look because she's got a lot of tattoos and she seems, like Jax says, that she doesn't put up with a lot of BS. While Jax is doing that, then we cut to Brittany, and Brittany is meeting Kristen for churros and an unknown beverage. I can't tell what they're having. Iced green tea. That's what it was. Iced green tea. I would drink one of those. If I was really mad at someone, but I showed up to meet with them the next day and they had an iced green tea and some churros, I would be way less mad. Significantly less mad. And it's so interesting because Brittany and Kristen, they seem fine. I mean, they're like, hey, I'm like, hey, they sit down like you guys were screaming in each other's faces last night. But I also think that that's where Kristen bringing up the other issue helped her stuff with Brittany, because then all of a sudden their fight seemed like nothing when Jasmine stood up and is yelling in Kristen's face. Like it dwarfed their issue. Brittany tells Kristen, Janet is really, really, really pissed off right now. And Kristen has the audacity to say, at who? At who? At who? At you. And Brittany, thank goodness she's married to Jax, because she very slowly tries to explain to Kristen, because everyone called her immediately and said, why did you run around telling people that Michelle was Republican and a racist? That's what Kristen is telling the world. And Kristen is exasperated over her iced cream tea. And she's like, I didn't say it. You think me would ever bring up that topic? Alluding to the fact that she got kicked off the show because of absolute true tone deafness when it comes to issues with race in this country. Tone deafness, maliciousness, intent to cause harm, just all of it. It was bad, all the way bad. And Brittany's like, I was like, why is Kristen even bringing this up? And Kristen says, yeah, no shit. And back on a confessional couch, Kristen says how much it sucks to have a word, racist, racism, affiliated with your name. I start to ask myself, was that intentional to throw in the word racism and someone else to just shift that, or to have somebody else fall in a quagmire of racist allegations so that you wouldn't be lonely there? I don't know. And I don't know how this thing is filmed, but on her confessional couch, she's still obtuse. She still doesn't get it. She's like, I just repeated what I was told. So why is everyone mad at me? And then at her green tea tro date with Brittany, I just spat out shit. I was backed into a corner. It wasn't my place to say it. So she can't even decide what she's going to go with at any given time, I don't think. Whether she's going to completely own it and be like, hey, I just threw stuff out there because I was angry and mad and I was just emptying the junk drawer of crap that I had that I could refer to. Or, I don't even understand why you're mad. Why are you even mad? Be mad at Janet. Which is it? You're flip-flopping back and forth. It's getting annoying. And Brittany, oh man. Brittany's like, I don't think Kristen does things to hurt people. She just does things sometimes. She's a lot like Jax that way. And I don't know if Janet is the one who was actually saying these things or if something was said and then, you know, Kristen like exaggerated it like Jax would. And Kristen's telling Brittany that the Zach stuff is really effing her up. And so Brittany's like, you got to get, just call him. Just call him. So I really am enjoying the fact that this show, they're like, just call. I feel like on Beverly Hills, everybody would just drag this out. This whatever it is, not just directly call the person and address it, but drag it out for like 6 episodes into a reunion. Whereas here on this show, twice in one episode, they stop what they're doing and call the person in question. I can't tell you how satisfying that is. It's like scratching a mosquito bite. So they call Zach. He answers and Kristen says, I am wildly confused why you are denying the stuff that you told me. I need to work on my Kristen voice. It's like, it's low register, but there's a little bit of an uptick. When she's talking to Luke, it's a little bit different. It's a unique one. And after some back and forth, Zach says, the Republican thing was said, but that does not mean racism. And furthermore, that Zach never said that. Kristen pops off and she's like, why would I say the effing R word, Zach? Don't throw me under the bus. And Zach says, you're the bus driver, Kristen. I mean, if that's not a great nickname, I don't know what is. And Zach says, quote, I'm not saying there wasn't something that happened, but what you did, you don't just blurt out something like that and accuse somebody of being racist. And we see Zach in his confessional where he's saying, quote, Kristen cannot keep a secret to save her life. Even when I tell her, do not tell this person what I'm about to say to you, she always tells them. And it's like, Zach, sweetie, then you have it coming. You know what you're doing at this point. That's why that I posted to my stories this like look on his face that cracked me up so hardcore, because you could tell that he was really upset and dealing with some things in the moment when Kristen aired it all out at girls' night. And he just like put his hand to his forehead and it made me laugh so hard because he was just processing like, this person has done it again. This person has spilled exactly what I did not want them to spill. That's on you, Zach. And again, Brittany's trying to convey to her over and over the fact that you brought it up at the party. And poor Zach, he's on speakerphone. He's on the table. You know, he's barely even there. He's yelling. He's like, yes, that's the point. Brittany says, you brought it up at girls' night and you need to take accountability for that. But Kristen doesn't go down easy in this area anyway. She says, but the fact that everyone else was talking about it and I was the only one brave enough to bring it up, that's not, people are not mad that it was, you know, even just said. It's me paraphrasing because it went all in all directions and all over the place. But she is still trying to skirt away from it, from the accountability and saying like, no, it's, you know, it happened and I just brought it up. And why are you mad at me? I can't do this anymore, Kristen. You have to accept the fact that you brought it up on camera. Then they show a flashback. I'm begging Bravo to show us just the linear footage from girls' night. They're giving us these weird little peeks around a corner in flashback mode with filters and everything's out of order. We see Zach and Kristen sitting on lawn chairs where it looks like everybody else was, but they've dissipated now. So they're by themselves near the pool. I think there's a pool. I don't know anymore and I don't care. Kristen says to him, I know what Janet said about Michelle Lolly. Am I wrong? And Zach said, you're not wrong, in a hesitating way. By the end of their green tea and churro gathering, Kristen acknowledges the part that I took in this was repeating it. Yes, yes, we've made some headway. Correct. Then we are back to Jesse, Hesse, and Michelle. And they are getting a visit from their life coach. In preparation for his life coach visiting his aspirational home near the Chateau Marmont, Jesse has on bright white flip-flops, some sweatpants, and his favorite, that same white V-neck Hanes t-shirt. Now, the man that walks through the door is muscular. He's got a beard, a shaved head, though. His name is Scott. He's wearing a wedding ring. Because my big thing is, like, if you're going to come in and coach somebody on marriage, are you married yourself? And apparently he is. And again, he is not a therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist. He is a life coach. And I ask myself, what is up with people with the life coaches and not doing therapy anymore? But I'm going to hold my judgment until I hear what Scott's made of. So they all sit down and he asks, how are we functioning together? Now, in a confessional, Jesse says, our marriage counselor isn't a therapist. Thank you for that. We know that. Continue. He's more of a coach. And the goal is to make us the best versions of ourselves. And if the best versions of ourselves are in love with each other, our marriage will survive. Michelle says that Scott worked on their friend's marriage and that really improved it and helped it. So this is a word of mouth situation. So prior to this meeting, Jesse says that they've only ever spoken to him on the phone. They had not met in person, which explains Scott's second question. I guess nobody answered the first one. His second question is, how are you feeling after the call? Jesse says there's constant conflict. Then they show some flashbacks. I mean, I can only imagine. What the camera catches being in their homes like this, how many hours of footage that are just filled with golden nuggets that they have that they never will be able to show us. That would be, they could just release uncut footage of all different seasons, and I think that we would watch it. But some of the footage that they show to highlight what Jesse just said about constant conflict is they're showing them walking together in the kitchen, and he's like, not too much milk, not too much milk. That's too much milk, by the way. And I'm thinking, what is it? Is it a kid's cup? Because, you know, you can fill those a little too high and then it's hard to get the lid on. And I'm like, okay, no big deal. If she poured too much, like, just take a big gulp of the milk before you give it to Isabella. No, it was not about milk for their child. She had made him coffee and she had dared to put more milk in it than Jesse Likey.
Then they show him in the B-roll throwing it out.
I've got to throw this out. It's just too much milk.
And she's like, I barely put any in there. If you make a man coffee and he doesn't like the way you make it and he complains about it the whole time, write in your diary that that is the first and last time that you make that man coffee. Scott asks Michelle, what are your needs that are not being met? And she's very emotional. You can tell that she's doing her best to hold things back. And she says, a lot of my needs are not being met. I've felt lonely for a long time, and raising a child can feel lonely when you're not interacting with adults and a partner. These are direct quotes. I get frustrated because he doesn't understand how I feel. And while she's saying this, Jesse's sitting next to her in his white tee, just taking a little sip out of his thermos. Michelle says, I'm no longer affectionate, and he's not either. Now, for anyone who has spent many hours, months, years at home alone with small children, I don't know what their lives are like. They're both supposedly real estate agents. I don't know how often she's going to work. I don't know if she has a nanny. I don't know how they do it, if Isabella is in preschool or what their daily life is like. But she's painting a picture of she is parenting 98% of the time, as she said in the first episode, that she's home alone a lot with Isabella, as she's saying in this episode. She feels alone. She feels by herself. Scott says, you're not getting tenderness. Michelle agrees and she says, yes, the opposite. And she turns to Jesse and she says directly to him, I think you're hard on me. And then she turns back to Scott and says, he's OCD about the house. He doesn't want the house to ever look like we had kids. What? She says he's tough on her in every aspect, business, all of it. And I'm watching this and I'm getting upset because you can tell how upset she is talking about it. And as I'm watching this, I'm looking around my living room and like, there's a little tiny crock, you know, on the floor in front of me, little kid's shoes. There's crayons, there's Legos everywhere. What world is it that he gets to decide that she has to keep the house looking as though her child doesn't live there? What kind of house is that? That sucks. I understand wanting to put toys away, but there's something about a man who's also not around. The best thing in the world for him would be to spend like 2 weeks alone parenting solo. Almost like the Parent Trap. Just put him in a cabin with Isabella. Here's all her toys. You see how manageable this is to make it look like a child doesn't live here at the end of the day, to do all of this solo and not go insane. And the last thing that Michelle says is that she feels like now they're living more like brother and sister than husband and wife. Jesse's just sitting there with a blank look on his face, like when he was asked about tweaking Kristen's nipple. Well, everything she's saying, I'm just trying to figure out how to like, and Scott interrupts and he says, don't lawyer this. Just sit with what you've heard. And I'm enjoying Scott so far because it's just dead quiet for a minute. And he's just staring at Jesse, just making him sit in the uncomfortable truths that his wife just said. Scott says to Jesse, she's walking on eggshells. Everything has to be your way. Yes, Scott. Rub his face in it. Do not let him ignore this. Then on a couch in a confessional, Jesse says,
it's tough seeing her upset. I wonder if I was the most passive husband and father, would it have actually made a difference? Jesse, my rage.
Your takeaway from that is that you're just not passive enough. He's gone. He can't be saved, Michelle. Let the blondes at Craig's have him. Let them do their worst. Let him have a second, third, fourth, and fifth wife. Bleed him dry. He can't be saved.
Back in the room, talking to Scott, Jesse says, I think there's a major disconnect with us. Like, I did a no drinking, like, and fasting challenge thing, and I lost, like, 12 pounds. And I'm like, where are you going with this? What is this? We need to know this right now? And then, for, like, the first time since we were married, she gave me a compliment.
Michelle jumps in right away and says, I could say the same thing about you. And I'm amazed watching this. I'm amazed. Because a few days ago, before I dropped the last pod on the Valley, I did a whole dive into them and I went back and looked at their Instagrams for years. And all the time that they've been dating and married, all up until May of last year, it's just the most glowing, thick, syrupy, my beautiful wife, all these pictures of them together, smiling, just reiterates the fact that social media couples who are always on there being like, married's my best friend, happy anniversary. I love you so much. Like, if you got to post it, I don't believe it.
Michelle says, not only do you not give me a compliment ever in your life, they're beyond y'all. They're beyond. They're so mad at each other. She goes on, if I show you or ask you, like if I knew have a new dress on or if like my hair is done or whatever, you just look at me. And most times you don't even look at me. You'd pretend to look and you're like, that's fine. So this is all bad. And Scott jumps to the chase and he says, when's the last time you felt sexually attracted to him? And there's just a blank stares all across the room. And I'm like, damn, Scott, you went right for the neck. Michelle says, don't ask me that question. Ouch. Ouch, Jesse. Scott's not letting go. Scott says, when? I don't want to answer that. Out of nowhere, Jesse says, 3 years and 9 months ago. Well, that's hurtful. That's hurtful. Their daughter is 3 and the 9 months is pregnancy. So he's saying the last time she was sexually attracted to him is when they got pregnant with their daughter. Michelle says, I don't know. It's been a while. In a confessional by himself, on a couch by himself, Jesse says, what is sex again? Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I watched Pornhub the other day. And then he starts reminiscing about when they first started dating and she would call him and be like, I'm naked. And he would leave work and run over there. Jesse, 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 it's never going to be like when you were first dating ever again. You're in the kid years. This is when you find out what you're made of. And just to make sure that we all know that he's never going to get it and this is never going to get better, he turns to Scott, the life coach, and he honestly asks him, well, what if I've complimented her, like, you look so good or whatever, and it's been like 2 months or something, and I'm still not being treated well? Without hesitation, Scott says, your attachment to the result is going to cause you to fail. Michelle chimes in,
because it's not genuine.
Scott says, right. You do it because you want to, not to get something. It's an awareness of how you're showing up. It's kindness. It's warmth to her. And while Scott was basically explaining how to be a decent person without just doing it so that somebody touches your junk, Michelle is crying. She's quietly sobbing. And aloof, Jesse turns to her and is like, why are you crying? She's crying because she realizes that you don't understand how to have a relationship. She's crying because the life coach just had to explain to you how to be nice to your wife. And that you're not just nice to your wife because you want her to pleasure you on top of doing 98% of the childcare work and never getting a compliment and like all the other stuff she's dealing with. Now you want her to clock in doing something else. You're willing to put some tokens in the machine until it does that. I would like to know what the good old days were like with Jesse. I mean, are these things personality traits that were always there and she was just fine with it before they had a baby? I don't know. This is all very interesting to me of how this went bad because it does seem beyond repair at this point. From there, we go over to Jason and Janet's house and she's craving fast foods. She has some delivered and their big focus at home is trying to get the nursery ready before the baby comes. After some talk about nursery and bassinet next to the bed, we get down to brass tacks and we talk about Kristen. Janet noticed that Kristen posted something to her Instagram stories. It's like a long quote. Oh, there's nothing more irritating than when somebody is putting some like passive aggressive hidden message stuff online. It's like, just say it to your face. Beat around the bush. Who is that about? There's a scandal going on. A celebrity puts up like a cryptic note. Just say something. But Kristen's far from a celebrity. She's a Bravo celebrity, and that's a different category altogether. And she posted a quote that said, I would rather adjust my life to your absence than adjust my boundaries to accommodate your disrespect. And Janet says, Mike, why is she mad at anybody else? She threw Janet, Zach, and Jasmine all under the bus in one swoop. Again, hashtag the bus driver. Beep, beep. And now finally, we get Janet's side of the story. In a confessional on a couch, Janet says, Michelle, Brittany, and her, Janet, were at dinner a few months ago. Michelle said, the don't say gay proposed law protects children. I said, no, 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 you're wrong about that. She said she knows that Jasmine is very read up on this topic. And now later in the episode, it's not spoiling anything to learn that Jasmine says that she is a fluid person when it comes to dating. And that if you had to put a label on it, she supposes she would be labeled bisexual. So Janet talked to her about it and said, hey, Michelle said this. If you ever hear her bring up that Bill, you know, maybe that's a moment where you could talk to her and give her your perspective, teachable moment kind of a thing. That was the extent of Janet's commentary about Michelle. Now, for anybody who's not aware in this country, or if you're listening from another country, which I know we have listeners all over the place, this is about a law in the United States that was referred to as the Don't Say Gay Bills. And it wasn't just in one state, and it certainly was not in California, which is why it's so interesting that these women were having this discussion at all, and that Michelle said what she said and had the opinion that she did, because California would never pass something like this. But in North Carolina, Arkansas, Iowa, and Indiana, they passed the Don't Say Gay Bills, which means part of the rules were in a school setting, a teacher cannot say the word gay, literally. They cannot talk about sexual orientation or gender identity. That's based on the Florida one, which was the original. Everything starts in Florida. And it was soon expanded to not just K-3, then K-8. And then that Board of Education expanded it to all grade levels. In Iowa, the prohibition on talking about gender or sexual orientation extends through the 6th grade. In Arkansas, through the 4th grade. And Indiana, the term was human sexuality cannot be discussed prior to 3rd grade. Now, as one would expect, that can get very tricky very quickly. I'll give you an example tonight. We're big on Dog Man books in this house right now. If anybody else's kids are big into the Dog Man books, they are very popular around here. And so we are reading a Dog Man book. And in one of them, am I going to spoil a Dog Man book for anybody? I hope not. There, a marriage takes place. All right. And my child had never read the word bride. How do you explain a bride without talking about gender? Or like, how would you answer that question? I think you make it weirder by if you were not able to just say what something is, because you're suddenly not able in any way to talk about gender or sexuality. And the word sexuality sounds scary and creepy until you really turn and look and you see like Minnie and Mickey Mouse holding hands and smooching. That's sexuality. It's just this cutesy kid version that everybody's okay with. I'm sure all that's going to go really well. It's good to know we have our priorities straight. You know, we're doing this like puritanical crackdown instead of making sure that we pay for all school lunches and that everyone can read. We're in our white refrigerator era. That's all there's to say about it. Inserting more government and school people that don't know you, don't know your family, don't know your child, giving them a lot of power over your lives. And our poor teachers, I mean, they're the ones who carry this burden. Every single time people freak out about stuff in schools, the teachers are the ones who have to deal with it. It's almost like we're in a dare for how bad can we treat teachers in this country. So I think it's all green flags of Janet to have heard that from Michelle, and she goes to the person that she believes understands the issue intimately and is also friends with Michelle and says, hey, if you hear her bring this up, you know, here was her stance on it. Maybe you can connect with her about this issue. And Janet is very clear. She says, I never once said that Michelle was racist. I wouldn't be her friend if I did. And Janet says that whole thing that she just explained somehow morphed into Republican and racist in Kristen's mind, or by the time it got to her. And her husband, Jason, finally weighs in. He's been listening intently this whole time as she laid it all out. And he says, in the future, you have to be cautious with anything that could potentially get back to Kristen. And I'm watching that. I'm like, why do you even hang out with her in her circle then? If you have to be cautious with anything that could get back to her, that's everything that you could say to anyone. And bottom line, Janet is saying this whole thing that Kristen's trying to do, it's not working for her. And if they're going to mend their friendship, Janet needs an apology. And if Kristen is not receptive to that, then she needs a break. And I think that break is what ends up happening, because Kristen doesn't seem like she's going to apologize. Now everybody's getting ready and they're excited because they're going to a $20 million mansion in the hills that Jesse is responsible for selling. If you were Jesse
and you needed to sell a mansion, how would you sell that mansion? Would you make it about you and a place that you like and have a theme party about Capri, Italy? Yeah, it feels right. We see Jesse in his kitchen in his favorite outfit, a white thin t-shirt, erect nipples, and chill pants. And he's listing off a bunch of different kinds of alcohol that he's procured for the Capri dinner. Then we get a moment where he's reflecting wistfully about why he loves Capri so much. Do you think it's about the weather, the smells, the sights, the sounds, the feel of the Mediterranean Sea? That would be a big no. Jesse says he loves Capri because
Michelin restaurants, best hotels. I mean, it's where all the billionaires park their yachts because that's who you want to sell to. You don't want to go to Long Beach Harbor. You go to St. Bart's. You go to Capri.
Now, behind Jesse, as he's talking to his wife in their bedroom, their bed is a normal-looking bed. And at the top of the bed, the head of the bed, there's a stack of three pillows on his side and her side. And what I noticed was that in front, leaning upon each stack on his side and her side, Hermes decorative pillows. So they're just a bed, three pillows, regular pillows that you lay your head upon, leaning against those stacks, Hermes pillows. It's like if someone just thought that's all they needed to do to make a bed or decorate. Like, nope, that's all we need. That's all we need here. No, we don't need like a whole thing and like a whole nice duvet and a bunch of different. Just lean some Hermes pillows so people know we paid a lot of money against each of our little stacks of pillows, okay? Michelle, you better make sure that every single morning we make that bed and you put those Hermes. I want to see when I walk into the bedroom, I want to lock eyes with pillows that cost a lot of money. Let's go see how much they are. Well, I found them. I found them on the Hermes website. Avalon 3 pillow, small model, $790. $800 per pillow. It's 90% merino wool, 10% cashmere, which I have to say is a pretty ideal blend, but still for $800, come now. And the cover does come off. So $1,600 worth of pillows on the bed, and it looked like a hostel bed with just two pillows on it. And maybe the bed was fine. Maybe I was just irritated because Jesse's just standing there in a headband with little hands on his hips, and he's just going off about this party. Oh, I'm sorry. He actually gets mad when Michelle calls it a party and he says, it's a sophisticated event. And she's like, you don't need to say that. It doesn't sound, it takes away from it. You can have a sophisticated party, but you don't have to call it a sophisticated party. And I realized in that moment who Jesse reminds me of. It's the Catalina wine mixer. Jesse reminds me of the actual brother, Derek. Their brother Derek in Step Brothers, the one who would yell at his family when they were in the car about singing the song right. The one who was like super crazy anal retentive and making everybody walk on eggshells around him in the family. And he was like obsessed with anything high end and luxury. It just fits. It fits. So then we see a lot of B-roll of this $20 million house they're trying to sell in the Hollywood Hills. And it looks like just a normal California house on the side of a hill. I don't know. I wasn't blown away. And Jesse makes sure to pronounce it Capri. Capri. And he tells us that they go every single year. He's also said a few times they're spending a lot of money on this sophisticated dinner homage to Capri. Then we jump over to Jax and Brittany's house. And Brittany's getting glam. And Jax walks out and he's got very tight, short, kind of like They're pedal pusher, little white pants. And he says to Brittany,
tight pants are what you wear in Italy, right?
And she giggles really hard at him and he sees that he's got a good audience for some laughs. And so then he throws another one at her and he's like,
well, the only Capri I know are Capri Suns.
And she cracks up. And just the funniest thing she's ever heard. She's working all day, all night, putting in time, making that man feel so good about himself. We cut quickly to Nia and Danny. She's back from the trip. She was tired while she was on the trip. He was tired while he was there with the infants and the toddler. And so they're getting themselves ready to go as well. Cut back to the mansion. And now Michelle and Jesse are there
And there she's in a colorful dress and he's in a linen suit because they decided that linen was the theme of the party. And she says, I want to get a quick, cute pic of my outfit. And so they take an adorable picture together. And this is why you can't trust social media, because I'm sure they posted it and people thought they were just happy as two little clams. Two peas in a miserable pod. In a car headed to the mansion, sophisticated dinner homage to Capri, are Jasmine and Zach and a woman named Melissa. Jasmine is explaining that she and Melissa are dating. Melissa is Italian, so she's going to really enjoy the dinner in Capri. And that's the section of the episode where Jasmine says that she's always been fluid, and if you had to put a label on her, it would be bisexual. So again, the dress code was linen, but Zach did not have linen. So he has a very thin, like, white shirt, open, unbuttoned. I think it's just cotton. And so he's already irritated, but he's trying to make himself feel better about it, because when they had the big, you know, county fair baby shower for Janet, when Jesse came, he was not dressed in theme. So Zach doesn't feel like he owes him that much. Now, I did notice when Danny was getting dressed, he was putting on a shirt that still had a tag on it. So bless him, even with three under two, he ordered something or went out and got something linen. Oh, my heart. And Jasmine is explaining that she and Melissa have been together for the past 3 years. So they've had a good long time they've been together and knowing each other. So we assume that Melissa also knows everybody else in this friend group. And they both are from the same place, like back home, East Coast. And Michelle clarifies when she announces to everybody, she's welcome everybody. And she says, this is an $18.5 million house. Okay. It's like a guy saying he's, you know, 6 feet tall and he's really just 5'11". We thought it was 20 million, but it's 18.5. Whatever. And things are already heating up. Before Kristen has even arrived, she's still in a car with Luke talking about how she needs to pull Janet aside and they need to talk. Meanwhile, at the party, you can't be the last at the party, Kristen. When you just stirred up a bunch of stuff, you got to be the first person there. They're already talking about you. Zach and Janet are already talking about how Kristen took 9 different conversations and boiled them down to racist and Republican. And Janet is saying, I need her to admit tonight that she fully mixed this all up. This was all her, that no one said exactly what she's saying was said. And in a moment of glory for Jesse, he's explaining in a confessional why it's so hurtful what they've said about Michelle, his wife, because he's saying they don't understand from her perspective, like her father immigrated from Iran. He had to flee because of religious persecution. And also being half Mexican on the other side, he says that for her, she's got a pretty thick skin, but that's just so out of pocket for them to have labeled her racist. So Kristen arrives and she walks in with Luke and she beelines over to Michelle. And she says, can I pull you aside? Can we talk at some point tonight? And Michelle has her hostess face on, where she's smiling and nodding at everything everybody is saying. This is probably not the time or place for her. She doesn't really want to do this here tonight. You can tell the look on her face. And she's like, yeah, no, no, no. And Kristen says, do you want to go do it now? And she says, no, no. But she's like smiling throughout. It's very, she's just getting through this thing. And Kristen says, okay, all right, well, we'll talk later then. And she gives her a hug and says, she's so sorry in her ear. And then gives her like a winky face. And they show Jesse watching this whole thing, kind of standing back and just kind of seeing it and looking agitated. And then Kristen runs back over to Luke and is like, I said hi to Michelle and she was just not very receptive. And it's like, well, yeah, this is her big thing, their big dinner. They've said they paid a lot of money for this. They're trying to sell this house. It's a high stakes thing. So maybe not right this, let the evening go by and then see if there's time at the end of the night, you know? So people decide they're hungry and they're going to start eating. They grab plates and I think it's like clams and pasta. Look, I'm a little distracted because like a child, I'm pretty sure I didn't hallucinate. Jax picked up pasta with his hands and ate it. I think it was only like 1 or 2 strands, but it happened. Sophisticated. So people are just having their own little conversations at this very long rectangular table and they're all talking about the thing. You know, Janet's complaining to Brittany that Kristen doesn't understand how serious what she said is. And then across from her is Michelle. And Michelle's like agreeing that she didn't reply to any text messages either. Kristen's a few people down. So she's in her little love bubble with Luke, just looking at him and they're picking stuff out of their teeth. I don't even know what they're doing. And the music they're playing is very dramatic. Dun, 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 dun. Like they're ratcheting it up. And then we see Janet talking about how annoying it is for her to be seeing Kristen, who started all this drama, just yucking it up, laughing, having a great time. It's starting to get under her skin. And they're really talking about her. Like Janet is turning to Brittany saying, but she's 40 years old. Like she needs to know better. And at that point, Kristen was in a lull in her conversation with Luke. So she heard them. So she turns to them and she says, does this feel inappropriate to talk about at the dinner table? And Janet jumps on it. She's like, well, to be honest, I missed it the last time everyone was hanging out. But I heard a lot happened. And I personally would like to know exactly what did happen and what's going on. And Michelle's ready to rock, too. She tags in and she's like, well, we're all in this. All of us pretty much are in it. So I'd really like us all to talk candidly because I'm tired of he said, she said. And Zach's about to have a heart attack at the end of the table. So Janet starts and she says, Kristen decided to say at Michelle's that I said that Michelle was racist, which I have never thought in my life, let alone ever said out loud. And I don't know where it came from, but I'm so disgusted by it. Boom, without missing a beat, Kristen says, it came from Zach. Poor Zach in his not linen shirt is like, it did not come from me. And in a confessional, he's like, he says what he pretty much said earlier, which is like, Kristen took all these little tiny bits of information and morphed them into something else in her mind and said that. And Kristen clarifies. She's like, here's how it worked. As far as I know, the game of telephone started with Janet saying something to Jasmine, Jasmine telling Zach about it, then Zach telling me and Luke about it, that Janet told Jasmine to be cautious of Michelle because she's a quote unquote Republican. And what Zach insinuated at my house to Luke and I is that that would equal racism and or slash homophobia. Direct quotes. Jasmine immediately jumps in and she says, take my name out of it. I have never had a conversation with Janet about people at this table. In her confessional, Jasmine says that she's Black and she has experienced racism. And so for someone in her friend group to just throw that label out there, it's not fair to Michelle or her or anybody in the group. Then we cut to Zach and his confessional saying that he's known Michelle for a long time. She's a good friend. She is not homophobic. And this whole thing is unfortunate. Kristen tries to move past it by apologizing and saying, Michelle, I should not have said those things out loud. I felt cornered. I should not have said them at your home. What? So not saying it all, that was founded in nothing. I should have never said that because it was based in nothing. I heard wrong. I made assumptions. Whatever. She's just saying, I shouldn't have said it out loud. I shouldn't have said it at your home. And then everybody just stares at each other for a minute. And Jesse breaks the silence by saying, why don't you just say what you did and that you lied? Call it a lie. Don't call it anything else. He can't even get the words out fully before Kristen's shouting, I did not lie. I did not lie. What? As she's yelling that, Luke leans forward. He has his arm around Kristen the whole time. He leans forward. He looks at Jesse and he says, calm down. Jesse's like, what did you just say to me? And he says again, calm down. Things are escalating quickly. Now Luke's about had it. Luke is saying in his confessional, wearing the linen outfit that he went to the party in. So let's hope this was right after. He says this, quote, literal sack of shit twisted Kristen's nipple. That nipple coming back to haunt you, Jesse. Haunt you. Luke goes on saying he keeps attacking her and he wasn't even there. And that he doesn't know what the F he's talking about. And he says in his confessional, that's strike two. And those are big strikes. Luke, what's going to happen when we get to strike three? Can you just give us a preview, please? Now, Jesse is mirroring Luke's pose. He has his arm around the back of Michelle now. With the other arm, he's leaning forward on his Capri dinnerscape. And he says, you do not tell me to calm down. Then, sophisticated party style, Jesse starts yelling over and over and over again, shut the F up, shut the F up, shut, just louder and more, you know, like contractions, closer and closer together. And Luke is like, you won't talk to me like that? We can go outside right now. Then Jesse directs his ire towards Kristen and he says, you walked in my house, and he's pointing. And Kristen is attempting to interject. So when she does, then he gets even madder and he's pointing still at Kristen and saying to her now, you shut the F up, shut the F up. And that throws Luke over the edge. He can't take it anymore. He jumps up from his seat. Now he's pointing and yelling, saying, no, you shut the F up.
Jesse's yelling, you apologize, you don't come at her. And now Michelle's yelling and she's like, but you're not saying the truth. It's everyone is yelling. It's a free for all. Jax is commenting saying, this ain't going to work. Sweet Nia, she's saying to Michelle, how do you know that she's not telling the truth? People are trying to de-escalate. People are trying to escalate. And Nia in her confessional says that she sees where Kristen was trying to apologize and that it's this game of telephone. And she feels like Kristen couldn't do anything right that night, no matter what. And then Janet from the other side of the table is yelling and she's saying like, this changes everything for me. I do not believe a thing that comes out of your mouth now. And Kristen keeps yelling and she's like, it is true. And it came from Zach. But Janet's not having it. And she's yelling, I'm done with crazy Kristen. I'm done. And in confessional, Kristen is kind of feeling sorry for herself. She's like, I'm an easy target, you know, with my past. And they show flashbacks of Vanderpump Rules where she was going off and falling down and all kinds of stuff. And she says, I think, you know, the issue is I'm honest to a fault. Zach knows that he fibbed and he knows that I'm right. And Kristen says that she is a walking truth serum. And Janet's still yelling. She hasn't gotten it all out. You know what I mean? Like she missed an episode. So she's got some cathartic stuff to go through. And she's like, if you thought I thought that Michelle was racist, why wouldn't you just call me? And her husband, Jason's like, yeah, why wouldn't you call her? And Kristen's like, well, she's come to a place where she's accepted. It's almost like she's accepted that she's going to be sacrificed here at this Capri dinner. And she says, well, I am just sorry that Zach brought this to my front door to try to make Janet look bad. And Zach is just head in his hands at the end of the table. And there's still a lot of yelling and a lot of crosstalk. And Michelle is trying to focus on something. She's saying, do you know what the problem is? And she can't get a word out because people are talking over each other. And so Jesse slams the table with his fist. Oh, no, my monitor just turned off when I did that. I'm not meant for violence. Anyway, Jesse slams his hand in closed fist form against his Capri dinnerscape. Lemons no doubt went flying. And he says, Michelle's gonna talk. So Michelle takes her moment to just summarize the obvious things that have been stated, which is Janet saying she didn't say that. Jasmine saying she didn't say that. Zach is saying she didn't say that. So the only person here that's saying that is you. And then we cut to Zach in his confessional again. He's like, well, no, I mean, I didn't say that. But let me just say, if you call someone a Republican in L.A., that's like the kiss of death here, blah, blah. And Jesse has a lot to get off his chest to Kristen because he's very concerned with their brand. I could tell just by scouring their social media. Stuff is curated. Stuff is meant to be. I swear, it really is the brother from Step Brothers. He's very focused on like appearances, you know, the facade and all that good stuff. And he's like, we have a business that we run together. He's trying to tell her if something like that gets out, which it's out, you're ruining lives. And Michelle jumps in saying, not only that, and she doesn't even get to say anything. He puts a hand up, the back of his hand up in front of her face and says, Michelle, please. Mm-mm-mm. Methinks it's going to be a solo trip to Capri this year. He's not done with Kristen. He says, you were thrown off an actual show for being a racist. Kristen is hurt. She's like, what did you just say to me? And she's going on and on again about that was the most painful thing that ever happened to her and that she understands why Michelle is upset. And it's the worst thing in the world to be labeled as anything, let alone a racist. So again, we say, Kristen, why would you ever on camera say that, bring someone's name into a sentence like that? A piano picks up, playing some chords in the background as we see a headline of Kristen being fired in June of 2020 for her actions against Faith, her fellow cast member. And the headline says, Kristen fired over racist comments. And in a very sweet voice, she says, I'm not proud of what I did. I'm sorry that I hurt people, but I've learned from my mistakes. She goes on saying, these are my friends. They know my past. They know all I want to do is pick up the pieces and move on. Only yourself to blame here. What are they supposed to do? How are they supposed to react to this? And Kristen's crying now in her confessional and saying that she's going to have to relive this whole thing again. It's going to be brought up again. I think it would have been anyway, because she hasn't really been on a show consistently since she was kicked off for this. So she was going to have to talk about it and talk about what she's done. Like, has she worked on herself? How does she feel like she's changed? This is not a great sign. She's crying and she's saying that she hopes that her whole life, quote, doesn't fall apart again.
And the episode ends with Michelle and Jesse just mean mugging Luke and Kristen, being like, no, what Jesse said is a true statement, that she got fired from a show for being racist. So it ends rough. It ends in the midst of that fight with Luke standing up and Michelle being like, you guys should go. Now, the Valley is doing well. It's catching on. People are realizing that they got some stuff going on over in the hot, dry Valley. And Jax has been really mouthy this week, just talking trash about Vanderpump Rules, about how it's scripted. He was at some restaurant or something and he had a microphone. Who gave him a microphone? I don't know, but what a wonderful idea. Just give him a microphone in public all the time, because he starts going off about how Vanderpump Rules has been scripted since the sixth season. And he obviously still watches it because he was tweeting also, how do you know when Vanderpump has literally hit a dead end and has nothing to talk about anymore? They have a water tasting. What the actual F? His trash talk is posted in my stories right now. I hope you like that recap. I did not mean to do a whole episode just on the Valley. Like I said, I was going to do half the Valley, half Potomac. But as I got into it, I knew it was going to be an hour long one. We're going to go over an hour because it's just, they gave so much. It gave and it gave and it gave. Next pod will drop on Monday, although I am traveling this weekend. So, ooh, we'll see what I can get done. I really want to cover Potomac, the reunion. In the meantime, whatever you do, don't be like Kristen. Don't get, in her words, canceled. How you cancel when you're back? You're back. You weren't canceled. You took a break. Chill. Only to turn around and then accuse someone else of being racist based on third-hand information. Just don't do it.